One of my big values in this new company that I'm running, No One's, is what I call bullish education, which means bullish education. We're not just teaching the 1, 2, 3s and ABCs. We're teaching you something that's actually going to make an impact in your life immediately, as in you're going to learn how to make money and improve your life. Bullish education, yes, you can give it to everyone, but ultimately, I'm not trying to educate, 10 million people. I'm trying to find that one guy, that one gal who's got that fiery entrepreneurial spirit, doesn't want to back down, is would be a self-initiator, and is just looking to smash. And I want to help them with every fiber of my being and every resource I have available, including my own personal emotion and nurturing and generativity, because I know that person is going to create, is going to create so many jobs around them, and that's what we need to do.
All right, everybody, welcome back. We are here with the one and only, the truly one and only, Ray Youssef, who is the CEO of No One's. He is currently also building CivKit, building multiple things for us to have a more peer-to-peer future. I like to refer to him as sort of the superhero of Bitcoin. He's about as wide and strong as a truck. I got to meet him in person in Ghana for the first time just a few weeks ago, but I've been following his work for many, many years. And so, Ray, it's great to have you on today. Please fill in any gaps there I missed in the introduction.
Yeah, you got it all, brother. I'm an African immigrant to New York and first generation, grew up in Hell's Kitchen, New York in the 80s and 90s. My parents' newsstand, went to City College, and here I am, driving a Mini Cooper on top of the world, feeling great.
That's right. Nice. And a fun fact, I actually used to teach at the college Ray went to, Baruch, in New York, which is cool. We obviously taught many years later. But also, you immigrated from Egypt, or your parents, you were born in the States, or you came over from Egypt?
I was born in Egypt. My parents came over when I was 2 years old. Yeah, so I'm a first generation immigrant to America officially. Yeah.
Amazing. All right. Well, I'm actually curious. Let's actually start there. So Egypt right now is actually one of the places that's most restrictive when it comes to Bitcoin adoption. Just curious. I've never heard you speak on this. What are your thoughts about that? And is there any hope that things might turn around there?
Yeah, there's always hope, but not with this current administration unless someone gets to President Sisi and shows him how, adopting Bitcoin will strengthen his reputation abroad, make him seem an innovative figure. Maybe that would work. Other than that, I don't really know much. And we have talked to the Central Bank of Egypt, and we're the only people that have actually talked to them. And we managed to actually allow them to allow us to start educating people about Bitcoin, but no dealing. It's still strictly prohibited. And listeners might not understand how bad the situation in Egypt is. If you do something the Egyptian government doesn't like, you disappear. You disappear. So, but peer-to-peer is still blowing up in Egypt. They can't really stop it. The Egyptians are very hot-blooded people, and they like to take risks. So. Can't stop peer-to-peer, not even a military strongman.
That is quite wild. And you're sort of known for figuring out workarounds peer-to-peer. You're sort of well known for being one of the first people to get Bitcoin into Africa. It was Nigeria through, you documented, how this worked on a number of occasions. But basically, it was, I think, Chinese gamers using gift cards and trading those gift cards for Bitcoin. You got money into Nigeria, which was, I think, toward the beginning of your focus on Africa and broader adoption in Africa. So you're currently working on something now with No One's, again, trying to broaden peer-to-peer adoption. Given all of the experience you have, you've been an entrepreneur for well over 2 decades. What is it about, focusing on peer-to-peer when you could probably focus on things that would be a lot more profitable for yourself? What is it about focusing on these peer-to-peer technologies that really drives you?
Yeah, I mean, truthfully, it's the only way to go. If you're in this for a win for humanity, this is the only way to go. Because if you go down any other path, you're just going to end up a part of the war machine. That's what we all have to accept right now. Yeah, there will be a lot more money, institutional money, this, that, but you're just going to be part of the war machine. So ethically, that does not sit right with me. I do not want to continue to fund this war machine that kills children. So if you're of the same mindset, you can only go peer-to-peer. And we're in a very special place in human history right now where the whole world is kind of waking up at once and realizing, we've been asleep for 2,000 years, and now we got some time to make up. So everything has to go peer-to-peer, and I don't just mean the money. That's the first thing that has to go peer-to-peer with the strongest momentum because it'll affect everything else. But, I mean, where you spend any, even fiat that you have, instead of going to the Amazons and the supermarkets, it's time to go back to the mom and pops. Yeah. Everything has to go peer-to-peer right now. It's our only chance.
Could you expand on that? Does that come from sort of the school of thought where we have to live in a world where there's sort of economic cooperation because otherwise there will be war? Is that like that basic principle of like when people can cooperate by transacting with one another, that tends to be the counter to people being told what to do by authoritarian regimes, which usually sort of promote war and their own sort of.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what you're saying is true, but it's even deeper than that because we're all waking up at the same time, beginning to realize now that, hey, every penny that we spend will literally go to this war machine. It's like unavoidable. Every major corporation is cool with babies being killed because guess who their shareholders are? They're the people that want to push all this stuff. And we literally cannot get away from it. Like it is everywhere. So like, oh, maybe let's find out what companies to boycott. Man, it's literally all of them. It is literally all of them. So, and if we figure out, oh, it's only 97% of them, well, those other 3% are probably in the same boat. They're just being a little trickier about it. So we're beginning to understand that the only way is to opt out of the system. Now, we don't want to go live on a deserted isle somewhere or in a forbidden forest. We're living in the cities, we're living, you know, with people around us, so what are we going to do? Well, we trust the people next to us, we trust our neighbors, we trust Farmer Dan over there, we trust, you know, Phil in the workshop in the hardware store over there. Let's just go to them. Yeah. Instead of going to Amazon, you can either vote with your votes, which are worthless, we know, so that's out. So you either vote with your feet, you vote with your eyeballs, and you vote with your money. Those three things. If you're not going to leave your home and you want to stake it out where you are, great. Vote with your eyeballs and your money. Your eyeballs, only give them to the people that matter, the people that have your morals. Everyone else, block, mute, they're gone. And your money, your neighbors, where, you know, get them to provide the same services you are. I mean, look, my hero in this is Malcolm X. Malcolm X was very smart. He was one of the greatest men of the 20th century, arguably. And he made it very simple. He said, hey, forget about, you know, conquering the world and becoming, you know, a great musician or a movie star or a basketball player or whatever for now. And just look at the corner store. Who owns it? Is it one of your people? Oh, it's not? Okay, well then, get one of your people or yourself to start a store right across the street and get all your people to come to you. He said this right in the beginning of the Civil Rights Movement. And I bring back the Civil Rights Movement because all of humanity is beginning to see, hey, wait a minute. We need human civil rights right now because this corporate class is literally eating us alive. So this is the civil rights movement, and it's all races, all creeds, all colors coming together and saying, all those minority people that were yelling and screaming all this time were actually right. They were right. All those black people that were going on in the rap video skits, they're trying to abort the fetus, they were right. And now we're all seeing it, white, black, brown, yellow, everything. And that's what we have to do. We have to take back local power, spend with our money, and most importantly, and this is what it's going to lead up to, we need to take back corporate power. We need our own Amazons, our own Googles, our own Apples, and we need them in the global south, because that's 80% of the population. Right now, if I'm trying to boycott the baby-killing machine, how do you do that? You're going to boycott Apple, Google, Amazon. There's a lot of them, man. What replacements do we have? We got some work to do.
I'm with you 100%. My question to you, you're no stranger to work. We all know that, those of us who have followed what you've done. Some people what I've noticed, especially even sometimes attending conferences, there's people who talk a big game, but are sort of a little bit apprehensive when it comes to actually going out onto the streets, talking to people, educating people, working with people. What do you think the biggest hurdles to like human psychology are and to catalyzing people when it comes to sort of accomplishing these things that you're talking about? Getting people more involved, transacting with people peer-to-peer, getting people to own their own shops, all of this stuff. It's in my very, very humble experience, 12 years as a teacher, some time as a social worker, having lived in the Global South, Venezuela, Ghana, Namibia, this stuff tends to be very challenging to do. I'm assuming you've seen some big victories in your time. So what sort of keeps you moving along? What keeps you hopeful when it comes to this actually coming to fruition?
Yeah, it's a great question. It's actually the biggest question. It's how do we terraform the planet right now to put all of these people to work? Like, hey, we have a mission here. We got to focus on this thing. Well, so the populist approach is not going to work because we've never had more weak people, more weak men, especially in human history, than we do right now. But on the counterpoint, we've never had many people as strong and as awakened who see the truth as we do right now. Right, so you can either try to focus on all those, you know, masses and try to get them to come over here to the medium point a little bit. And I'm telling you right now, it's a waste of time, bro. Complete total waste of time, man. You're gonna try to rope and, you know, lasso in these NPCs. Ain't gonna work, bro. It does not work that way. Our modus operandi should be one thing. I would rather have one lion. The 999 NPCs. Just give me one lion. In fact, I'd rather have one lion than 9 million NPCs, honestly. They just are going to slow us down. So let's focus on where we need to focus, which is the Global South. And there's plenty of great people in the West, like yourself, like myself, of course. And we all need to understand right now that we have to pivot to the Global South. Like, this is business. This is actually just business 101. I've been a startup guy for a long time. Yep. When you're not getting product market fit on something, because the product's not right, the market's not right, well, you pivot. Try something new, bro. Don't be afraid to pivot. Pivots are life. And we as humans now need to pivot away from the West because we're seeing it is just a corpse that is a zombie corpse and trying to drag us all down with it. And it's aging. It's not actually making anything except weapons. Right. The Brits do make some nice race cars, though, but okay. The Global South is where all the youth is where all the growth is, so let's focus on that. Yeah. Now, of course, one of my big values in this new company that I'm running, No One's, is what I call bullish education, which means bullish education. We're not just teaching the 1, 2, 3s and ABCs. We're teaching you something that's actually going to make an impact in your life immediately, as in you're going to learn how to make money and improve your life. Bullish education, yes, you can give it to everyone, but ultimately I'm not trying to educate, you know, 10 million people. I'm trying to find that one guy, that one gal, who's got that fiery entrepreneurial spirit, doesn't want to back down, will be a self-initiator, and is just looking to smash, and I want to help them with every fiber of my being and every resource I have available, including my own personal emotion and nurturing and generativity, because I know that person is going to create so many jobs around them, and that's what we need to do. It's just like running a business. You're not, you know, going to try to hire 10 NPCs or 100 NPCs. You're going to try to find that one person that's going to take away all your headaches and just build all around, and that's how the bottom line changes. We have to be very practical about this. We have to be thinking in terms of traction, and we have to be thinking in terms of things that we know that work. Yep. That work, right? You're looking for that talent, and there's a hell of a lot of talent in the Global South. Yep. Tremendous talent. Once we get the money flowing, man, you go into Lagos in Nigeria, literally every other brother you meet is going to have a fintech startup or wants to start one. These are driven people. That's just why I focus so hard on Nigeria. I'm like, whoa, what's in the water over here? Where did these people come from? And that's all I want. I don't care if they're black, white, Asian, whatever it might be, but bring them in. And they're there. They're waiting for us. So we have to focus on the winners, the ones that can really move the needle.
That's a perfect way to put it. Two things came to mind. I was just speaking with Zonda Fatsing, who I think used to be, he did work in Francophone Africa for Pactful. We spoke for a little bit, and he talked a lot about don't try to teach everyone, just try to teach people well, just try to get through, and then the people who really get it, it'll resonate with them, and things will work, you know, expand from there. And then I think the other thing people said, people have been highly critical of El Salvador. I was just there before I went to Ghana. And I said, the story in El Salvador is not the fact that 90% of the country hasn't adopted it. It's looking at the 10% that has adopted Bitcoin and the changes that it's made in their lives. And not just sort of held some of it, but actually started to sort of study it, understand the ebbs and flows of it when you measure it in fiat, all that kind of stuff, but build businesses around it and also tap into the international community, people from around the world that will buy their goods and services with Bitcoin. Cutting out the middle people, being able to ship directly from a coffee farmer in El Salvador to somebody in New York City, all of that stuff. I'm like, that's the story. And I think that speaks to your point where it's not about trying to reach everyone. It's trying to find those sort of fiery souls who are out there trying to make something change and who need the support, the mentorship and all of that. So
yeah.
Please. I'm sorry about the rambling there.
No, that was great. And just to further elaborate on your point, it truly is peer-to-peer. You know, and when I say peer-to-peer, I literally mean person-to-person, human-to-human. You are looking for those superstars. Instead of going into a room and saying, okay, what floor is this person on? How many stairs up the ladder are they on? Don't look at that. Try to find out what their ceiling is. And you want the highest possible ceiling. I don't care if they're in the basement, but if their ceiling is high, that's it. I'm going to take the time, and I'm going to invest in this person peer-to-peer, because I know I'm going to get a leader out of this person. And one leader will go out and create 10 more leaders, peer-to-peer, not just by building businesses and business plans, but literally by building people. That is the power of generativity. That is what leadership is. The best definition of a leader is someone who literally makes other leaders. Yeah. This is the ultimate power.
Yep. I'm with you 100% there. My other question is, you know, you often wear your heart on your sleeve. You talk about how much you care, about how hard things can be sometimes. Being a leader is obviously a very challenging thing emotionally. And some of the stuff, if you're sort of building other leaders, you sort of have to prep other people to be ready for that sort of emotional lift that comes with leading the way. How do you cope with it? How do you help other people cope with it? Because if we don't figure out a way to sort of restore ourselves and to make, you know, to keep ourselves strong while we're in these positions, you know, things can fall apart. So what is your strategy when it comes to leading for sort of taking a little bit of a break to take care of yourself and to teach other people the same, to you know, self-care gets thrown around too much, but, you know, just being able to pull back, allow yourself to cognitively decompress from the amount of information you have to pull, you know, process, allow yourself to emotionally decompress from the amount of people who you're going to be sort of helping to lift up. What does that look like for you, and how do you teach that to other people?
Yeah, so that's hard, because you have to know yourself. You have to know, you know, what makes you tick and what gives you actual relaxation and ease. Mm-hmm. And that takes a long time for people to figure out. I'm 46 years old. I just kind of figured out most of it. Only the last few years of my life. It took that long, really. So I don't have any advice on how you should figure those things out, except to experiment, see what actually puts you at ease. People use self-care a lot, but that means more than just manicures and pedicures. It means, you know, building a system of gratitude and discipline into your life in even the smallest ways. And that could just be going to the gym, getting half a leg day in, bam, better than nothing, bro. Gotta get that leg day in. And instead of just being about maintaining, the most driven people that have the potential to be leaders, you tell them, okay, you're just going to go to the gym to maintain your body. That's not exciting. You have to go there to build something. We also have to be building and vying for something. That's what entices me. You know, if you say, go to the gym so you don't get fat, I'm like, no. I'm going to go to the gym to get strong or to get, you know, whatever it might be. Yeah. So figure out how to incentivize yourself and trick and hack your own psyche. You know, get into that. And the number one way, and this is the big one, you need God in your life. And when I say God, I don't just mean, you know, being doing yoga and messing with crystals. You truly need to submit to a higher power, not any of this New Age mumbo jumbo. I don't care if you're an Orthodox Christian, a Buddhist, a Sufi, a Taoist, whatever it is. You must understand that if you are all you have in this world, then you're fucked. It's not going to work, Holmes. You better submit to a higher power. You can call it the God, you can call it Allah, you can call it the universe, whatever you call it. You better get into that real quick, and that brings ease. And if you, you know, you go on the journey, invest the time in your spiritual development. And some people will see someone praying a certain way and be like, oh, that's beautiful. I'm into that. Some people will approach it like a detective, like I did. And it took me, you know, a decade to figure it out. But I found what way was best for me. But do take God seriously in your life, because without that, you're just not going to make it. And if I had that when I was 26, I would have been a billionaire probably 10 times over by now. But I didn't have that. So I lost like 10 years of my life or more. But, you know, those were lessons. I was very arrogant, and I needed to be humbled. And I got it. So I'm grateful.
It's great. Yeah, it's great that you can learn that. I would agree 100%. You know, it's – and especially I think I was with last night a woman I used to work with at a public school in East Harlem. She was the social worker at the school, African-American woman. We talked a lot about exactly what you just said. Things right now, like you said, in the West, and especially in places like Harlem and New York, in the Bronx, things are not good. People are hurting. Drug use, I mean, and bad drug use, fentanyl and crystal, yeah. Bad stuff. And you know, there's a certain thing where she's still helping people on the ground level, you know, person to person. But there's a certain lift that you just can't do when you're watching stuff deteriorate at this rate, and you sort of have to give it up to God or whatever you want to call that, to a bigger force. And to do your best still, it doesn't absolve you of trying to be out there, being there for people, but I think it's you do sort of have to use that as some form of context, a way to sort of give it up a little bit and to, I don't want to say to lighten, it's not for the sake of lightening your own load, it's just for the sake of not crushing yourself with the burden that all of this can feel like sometimes. It's quite a...
Yeah, and there's nothing wrong with lightening your own load. You know, yeah. You know, I'm sorry, let me just say this one thing.
Yeah.
About God, I'm not getting into your religion. Look, avoid religion. I mean, avoid religious dogma and just seek truth. I read every religious text I could find from every school of thought, just looking for the truth, and I eventually found it. Be like that. Do not just buy into dogma. Something doesn't make sense to you, keep going until it makes sense.
Yeah.
That's the way. And if it does make sense to you and you're happy with that, great. Not all of us are like that.
Yeah.
But you need, and that, I think that's enough. I was going to say something else, but let's not go that deep.
No, that's okay. Go for it. We like keeping it deep on this show.
Maybe later I'll get into it. I'll see how I feel. I might get myself into trouble, but no, it's all good.
No worries. All right. Let's go back into something else that you mentioned to me when we spoke and I've seen you post about on Twitter. You're talking about Africa by bus. So traveling the continent by bus, kind of, I think it was doing stops at universities, maybe other locations as well, but doing work around Bitcoin education to help further adoption. This, I can imagine, from a logistics point, will be quite a challenge. I used to tour manage bands. That was hard enough in the United States, where things are pretty, where communication systems, you know, are a little bit more dependable. Even roads are a little bit better in a lot of cases. Where did this vision come from, and what is it looking like as you're in these planning stages for it?
Yeah, you're going to laugh, and everyone's probably going to laugh, but I was in Ghana. And we just opened up an educational center in Kumasi, which is the next big city after Accra.
Yeah.
And the village elders came to me during the ceremony, and they handed me the certificate. I still have it here. And it said on the certificate, "We present this to you, CEO of Bitcoin." And I thought about that, like, oh, that's so cool. That's so cute. That's great. But then I really started to think about it. And you know what? I'm clearly not the CEO of Bitcoin. There is no CEO of Bitcoin. But humans are creatures that respect a hierarchical framework. That is literally the nature of our DNA. And of course, this is peer-to-peer. You know, everyone can go straight to the sword. We don't do, yes, understood. But humans are still hierarchical creatures. They're looking for examples. They're looking for leadership. They're looking for FaceTime. They need another human there. It's peer-to-peer, right? Which means those peers are actually humans. A human needs to go on the ground and show everyone his face and speak to them and show them that he's serious. But you're asking for people to come into a relationship with you. Like, hey, that old guy, man, he was just robbing you blind, giving you fake stuff and making you work for nothing, and then just robbing you 10 other ways and printing more money from that guy's a scammer. Forget that guy. Here I am. I'm promising you this new cool money, but yeah, it's a little harder to use, you know. There's all this tech. You want them, you know, her, let's say her is the people, to accept this ring that you're going to give her and put it on her finger.
That's fair.
Commit. What are you doing to earn that kind of commitment, right? You got to go there. You got to show your face. You got to show them that you're a human being. And that's why I was thinking, you know, we've been thinking too small. These guys are honoring me as the CEO of Bitcoin because all I did was just go there. Yeah, I built a school too, but they were just so happy to see me, a real person that they can actually identify with this thing. Like, oh, wow. Yeah, Ray, he's a really nice guy. That's what we need, man. We can talk about the blockchain and all this. And okay, great that we have that. But the people need to get out there. Leadership needs to be out there. Now, I can't be out there alone because they'll just snipe my ass right after a while. But that's why we got all these peers with us. But we still need those leaders. So the same way all these great leaders, you know, what did Jesus do before he began his mission, right? It's in the Gospel of Barnabas, actually. It's a great read. But before he actually went into the middle of the town square, and he stood right up to all the scribes, the priests, the doctors, the politicians, and called them all out in the most base, ferocious manner that will ever exist in human history. He went out into the suburbs, into the country, and worked miracles for months and got literally an army of people with him. Yeah. And they joined him on that march. And we got to do the same thing. We got to do the groundwork on the streets, going to the universities, going to the youth, explaining to them how this works, coming with our hands open.
Yep.
Everyone eats here. Here's how it works. Let us show you. We're not asking for your money. We're giving you a start here. You don't have to invest anything except your time. And that's not enough. The youth are not enough. We need to go to the old people. And the old people in Africa means anyone over 40, right? So, because everyone's so young, they consider that old. But these are just professionals that have networks, have, you know, great careers, and also have a problem that there's 20% monthly inflation.
Yep.
And that's hurting them real bad. And they're looking, how can I get into something that's not going to go down? And they're looking at this Bitcoin. Okay. And then here we are. We have to go to them too. We have to go to the priests, the imams, the elders, the respected people in the community, show them how this works, introduce them to the youth that are doing this, and bring all those people together. And then when the government sees, wait a minute, it's not just our youth peddling this Bitcoin, it's also my doctor, my lawyer, my children's school teachers. Wait a minute, I think we should be looking over here instead of, you know, looking at all that fake money the West is waving at us with their guns. There's actually more for us over here. And that's how things change, which is why this Gold Coast tour is a must. It'll be I did a tour like this in 2019 in Kenya and South Africa in 8 universities. Volume shot up like this.
Is that right?
And massively. 30% the first week, and it just kept going up. It was, you know, it was just sustained. Because the word kept spreading. And now I want to do this 10 times bigger. It is essentially, you know, you could call it a rock and roll tour, but it's not. It's more like a presidential campaign. It really is. It's almost like I'm running for the president of the United Nations of Africa, you know. And I'm saying, hey, guys, I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm not here to tell you what to think. I'm not here to make any decisions from you. I'm here to learn from you about your problems. And I got something here that can solve some of these problems. This is a new way for us to have, you know, to do the business that we couldn't do before. We can do it with this. We can make that money move around. We can make free trade happen. Pan-African trade is officially at 13%. In Latin America, it's 30%. In Europe, it's over 70%. I'm here to tell you that 13% number is also fake, because they're counting in that 13% all these entities that are owned by Western corporations that are trading with each other. Real Pan-African trade is less than 1%. Isn't that insane? How are these people not extinct? They should be even poorer, considering how bad. I mean, how rich would America be if New York didn't trade with New Jersey or California. And they can, because they, you can't send money to the country next door. So once we solve this problem, there'd be some, barometers, measurements, variables for our success. And Pan-African trade is one of them.
Yep.
That's a huge one. It's going to create jobs. That's what free trade does. Oh, man, if only I had this, I could expand my operation and put my whole village to work. Well, guess who has that? That country, five countries away where I can't send and receive. How am I going to pay that guy for that stuff? Oh, I got to fly to New York, get in New York City, bank account. Like, that's what people actually do. If you have to leave your whole continent to be able to trade on your continent and get a bank account and ID in another place, like, that is why these people are poor. We have a chance to fix all that now. That is the path. Anyone looking at any other path and saying, oh, this, fuck that, man. We solved this problem or we're finished. We solved this problem and we've won. So I'm putting all guns on solving this problem.
That was... I've heard you say many things. That was the most inspiring of all of them, though. And I followed you for quite a while, and I really appreciate that. Like, I think, and I heard you say something very similar in person while I was standing next to you. It was you and Seb Gespalo, who's doing work, amazing work in Virunga in the Congo. We were standing outside after you spoke. And I think that you spoke a lot about Pan-African trade. And I had never really thought about that as much. I just didn't know what the statistics were. And that was the first time you had sort of introduced the people you were speaking with. That's the first time I had heard you speak about that. And it really does blow my mind. And what you just said about needing to use these sort of Western traditional financial rails to do business within Africa is true insanity. It's absolute insanity. And even more basic things, I was speaking with Kumi Nkansa from the Bitcoin Cowries. I met him for the first time in Ghana, but I had interviewed him here. And he even spoke about just basic banking stuff. Even if you want to do international remittances, you can't even do it with CDs. You would first need to buy dollars or pounds and then do the remittances with that. When people learn this, and then also I think what this does for people who don't know what Bitcoin is that they start to learn about Bitcoin not just as an asset, but as a network. And that network can connect these people seamlessly. And I think that's also the story and the messaging that doesn't often get out there for at least people who don't understand what Bitcoin is. Having a permissionless network with low fees for remittances that people can use to get in touch with whoever they want and transact instantaneously. I just, obviously the West keeps that at bay because they have their own rails and they don't want that getting out there. But when I do speak with the quote unquote normies about this stuff, people who are who do really amazing work here in the States, who just don't like teachers or whatever, who just don't really like or get Bitcoin, they're like, oh, I never thought about it like that. But like you just said, without actually getting in front of people and talking with them about it, it doesn't matter. Twitter is an echo chamber. Nostr is an echo chamber. These are great tools. Don't get me wrong. And little by little, maybe people find it. But the average person is not looking for their information in these places. They need to be spoken to. And they need to hear about this, I think, from people that they trust. I think you are one of the primary examples of that in the space of somebody who walks the walk, not just talks the talk. And I think that that's a really big thing. I would imagine you've worked with plenty of people who do like to talk the talk more than they walk the walk, though. So, and I'm not hinting at any specific people here, but so you're constantly sort of refining who you work with, and you just built this new kind of bigger team at No One's. What has that been like? What has it been like sort of assembling your No One's army or your No One's team? Everyone that I've spoken with from it seems amazing. I expect it no less, but what has that process looked like?
Yeah, so our mission over the next 6 years, because I only think we have another 6 years to really win this thing, is to really build the team. We have to build the team. It's all about the team building, peer-to-peer, right? That means other humans that you're working with this. And they might be in your company, they might not be. We just have to help anyone whose heart is in the right place. And one of the best things about what's happening in the world right now is you're starting to see who people really are. You're either for human rights for real, or you're not. Okay, you're not. Okay, well, yeah, you were real cool. You were real smart. But sorry, bro. I have to be with my humans over here. So we need to help those humans. And they may need some help. So the team at No One's is amazing. It's a small team. It's under 100 people. And I really like that. My old company had 450 people, and that was just insane.
Yeah.
It was all wrong. Look, in startups, you need to hire slow, fire fast. And me, as a builder, I would rather have a team of five lions than a team of 500, A people. Because a lion is like a AAA person. That's a lion, right? Give me five triple A's. Hell, give me one triple A. You know, two people in the company, I would take that over a team of, you know, even 500 A people. So I'm really not, and I'm not the best manager in the world. Any people can just go. And those people are very, very valuable. And no one's as full of those people. The team here is important because the team has to actually be real. Meaning, I told all the chiefs, yo, we're going to be boots on the ground. It's not just going to be me. It's going to be, if you want to be a chief in this company, you're going to be boots on the ground. The CTO, this guy is going to Africa, talking to all the vendors, talking to all the customers, sitting them and having drinks with them, going over every little thing. He's doing trades. He's out there talking to people on Twitter. This is the kind of team that is needed because this is not just another company. This is not just another fintech startup. I am literally looking to create a Google from the Global South, but bigger and better. It's got to be a super app for the Global South, meaning that we should have a self-contained kernel of civilization within all of this. So we can all get off all the censored, it's not just censored communications, it's censored money value transmission. They literally put up these walls. I call it financial apartheid, and it's the worst form of apartheid. It's the most debilitating form of apartheid, and it's so prevalent people don't even realize that there's a world without this. But there is, and I told everyone on this team, we are on a mission. We've got 6 years to not just build a trillion-dollar company. Okay, that's a number. It doesn't mean much. We have to cure a problem, and there's two real big problems. The financial apartheid is the biggest one, right? But there's another problem that's really, it's equally as important. It's even a symptom of the first problem, and it's the lack of self-esteem of people in the Global South. And it's a big one, man. Like, you know, we're Americans, right? So we're like, hey, America, America. We just have this natural kind of confidence that we get because America has such a glorious commercial history. Let's face it. I mean, the American way of doing, I like it. It's very aggressive, but you get shit done, and that's great. But people in the Global South, they've been beaten down with, you know, the same images we get of people in Africa is the best example. Poverty, disease, corruption, kid with a distended belly, hitting flies. All your leaders are corrupt. That's why you're poor. But when you say that, you're basically saying, okay, your leaders are corrupt. But guess what? You're corrupt. You blackies can't rule yourselves. That's basically what we're telling them. And, you know, a lot of them don't believe that, of course, but it's hard not to internalize that slowly over time. So once the Global South, all these black, brown, and yellow people say, hey, wait a minute, we've got a killer trillion-dollar company here that's providing real value and just blew up out of it, they will have confidence and self-esteem again, and that's what we need. You can't underestimate the importance of that. It's and I see that when I talk to people. You just start to feel it, you know, and I'm like, I want to fix this problem. Because I know once this problem is gone, you're going to see an explosion of talent and energy that will be, and it's already, they're already there waiting, but this is just going to kick it into a level that is insane, and the whole world will really suffer from whiplash. That's how fast the Global South will rise up.
Yep, I'm with you 100% on that. I spent time there before I even knew what Bitcoin was. I was living in Ghana before Bitcoin was even a thing. Some time in Venezuela, time in Namibia, and I always came back from these places sort of feeling, and I say this, I don't know how better to say it. The first word that comes to mind is sort of me. I personally sort of felt worthless. I met so many people who were good with their hands, entrepreneurial, caring, you know, good member of their community. And I didn't have enough knowledge at that time to sort of understand the depth of what was holding people down. I understood a little bit of the World Bank and the IMF and American history and intervention in some of these places, but I didn't really have that deep of a knowledge. But when I did find Bitcoin, for me, it was later 2018, and then thought about it as a tool in these places, my vision is exactly the same as yours. It's like, just wait until, people start to gain that confidence, recognize what their potential is, but then start to have tools to actualize things and to bring these things to life. It's going to be an absolutely sort of an amazing period. I think the hard part is just making sure it stays sustained and that people stay connected. Meaning, you know, it's very easy for people to sort of lose faith in this stuff, whether it's like, you know, a bear market, if you're measuring Bitcoin in fiat terms or something like that, whatever it is, or maybe if you try a few things and they don't work. So it's sort of that mentorship and that nurturing, staying in touch with people, continuing to believe in projects. But that does take It's a lot of effort, you know. It's a lot of work.
It is, yeah. And the work, you know, when education is like a marketing buzzword right now, right? Everyone's using the term education, 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 but they don't really believe in education. I've been in education since day one. We built 13 schools in Little South. I want to build 100. Yeah. Constantly pushing that. But look, it goes deeper than just teaching people about your platform or teaching people, you know, what a private key is or 2FA is. The most important lesson, besides teaching people how to make money, is, again, we're going back to Malcolm X. How do we get here? How did we get here? Oh, with us Africans always just poor and with corrupt leaders and starving and, you know, there's flies buzzing around. Was this always the situation? No. Okay, you're saying we were great at one point, but okay, but what happened? How did we get here? Let's take Egypt, for example. Egypt, you know, we all know what ancient Egypt was, right? And now you go there, and let me tell you, bro, it's picking up a little bit, but the Egyptians have been robbed, man. Like, the whole culture got destroyed. They suffer from, it suffers from more obesity than the United States. People are dumbed down. The media is controlled by three companies. As bad as the United States is, Egypt is even worse and more repressive. And you're looking around as an Egyptian, and I'm like, man, we built the pyramids. Now we're just pooping all over. What's going on over here? And I went back and said, okay, I need to figure out how we got here, because that's what Malcolm X said. If you don't tell people how they got to the situation they're in, they would automatically assume that this is the way it's always been, and we're just ignorant and lazy, and we can't do anything. And that's why when in Ghana, I got in some trouble. It's like I gave a presentation.
I was there. I watched it.
Bro, I got chewed out, man. But, bro, I went hard, as you know. I had Gaddafi.
Yeah.
I went Mark. I didn't even put my man Mugabe on there, and I told people exactly why these guys were killed and why they became public enemy, and I got chewed out for that shit. You know, and I understand where that's coming from. But people don't want people to realize how the lies work, because they want to keep them ignorant. They don't want them to know that, hey, you had great leaders. They did some amazing work. Like, I'll give you guys an example on this show. Kwame Nkrumah, he was the first leader of Ghana, and Ghana was the first country to break away, to have its independence in 1957. Yep. At his inauguration, Martin Luther King was there. James Brown was there, the musician. And this was right when civil rights in America was like really starting to like bubble up. And at the time, the British were like, oh, black people, black kids can't self-rule. Well, Kwame said, no, us black people can self-rule. Yep. And he took power. And what did this guy do in just under a year? He built 200 factories. He built wells, schools, roads, rapid. And they saw that, and their eyes bugged out. They said, we got to lock this down. If the rest of the continent sees this and the black people in America see this, we're finished. We got it. And he went on a trip, and they immediately had a coup happen when he was out of the country. And he ruled for less than a year, but he did so much in a year. It was just insane. And he was lucky he didn't get killed. He was just exiled. But my God, that's how fast things can move if you have a good leader. Literally, if he had another 3 years, Ghana would probably have been one of the richest countries in the world, honestly, by now. And that's the truth. That's how we got here. And I could talk about Egypt at length, but that's a little too much right now. But it's okay. With education, we have to show people. This is exactly how we got here. They killed these leaders because they were doing this, this, and that. And now they want you to think that they were tyrants and corrupt. But now every other leader is too afraid to do what they did because they saw what happened to them. So they'll just keep the lies coming. And here's how we fix it. That's bullish education.
Yeah. It's interesting, too, because I think when it comes to education and even activism in the West, I'm not sure if you feel this way, but the interpretation of it, it's usually always associated with the left. Like, that those are the people who want to do stuff. But when you get to Africa and you listen to people talk about stuff, maybe to some degree Latin America as well, you know, oftentimes because of corruption at the higher levels, the only way forward is essentially empowering people one by one. Because like you said, it's so difficult for leaders to do things because we know the history is you will become extinct if you do the, if you try to make changes, systemic changes, not just kind of facilitate the handouts of whatever. But if you do try to actually change the way something works to empower people in the country, things will not be good. But if you empower each person one by one, if you do it person by person, it's going to be a lot more difficult to stop something like that, especially with a permissionless network like Bitcoin.
Yeah, exactly. And as always, our best guy is a guide for figuring out what we need to do is what the bad guys don't want us to do. Like this one German bureaucrat was saying, we must not allow Africa to industrialize, you know. And that's the whole sentiment of the EU and the West. They cannot allow Africa to industrialize. But what's that going to do? It's going to make them self-sufficient. That's going to create jobs. Oh my goodness, so when that happens to a country with all that young talent and all those natural resources, that's it, they're going to break away. Just like Zimbabwe almost broke away. So then they got to hit them with as many disasters as they can to shut that all down. They don't want civilizations breaking away. What you're going to start to see in these next 6 years, you're going to see multiple global south countries starting to break away at the same time. Yeah. And they will most likely be a part of BRICS. And the West will be scrambling to, you know, deploy whatever they can to shut it down. The French have failed in Niger, Mali, and Burkina Faso. The United States is going to be bogged down with the war in the Middle East, the war against Russia, the war against China. They won't be able to quell
the
situation.
Each other, maybe the civil war that we'll be facing as well.
Exactly, exactly. And that's where you're going to have real breakaway civilizations coming soon. Yeah. And then everyone's going to start to see, wait a minute, you're telling me that these Black people and brown people got their shit together that fast, and they're all living a life like that right now, and looking around in Philadelphia and you're seeing crack addicts walking like, what the
right.
Wait a minute, we can do, why don't we do and then the whole myth, the biggest myth in the world is that we live in a world of scarcity, that it's a dog-eat-dog world, there's not enough to go around for everyone.
Right.
Then the abundance mindset will take him to come in, and that's honestly the biggest lie that we've been told. That there's not enough to go around. We all have to fight and scramble for everything. And it's just the biggest lie that humanity has. That will begin, that will start to fall. This matrix is like a spider's web. One little scratch and this whole thing comes down.
Starts to, yeah, I agree 100%. And just a quick technical question about that. Do you think from when it comes to abundance, Jeff Booth talks a lot about how when you have sort of this world where we have technology bringing down the cost of things, and then when you measure that technology in a deflationary asset like Bitcoin, do you think that that is part of it? So not just sort of enabling people in the global south, but the actual using Bitcoin as a measurement for things and using sort of a sound set amount of money as a way to measure things in an age of technological innovation. Do you think that that's part of what creates the abundance in the world?
Yeah, that's a deep question, and you know, it's interesting because Bitcoin is, it's in a battle right now for its soul, right? Mm-hmm. Is the Bitcoin going to continue as the revolution that Satoshi Nakamoto intended, the revolution that humanity needs? Is it going to be this new global financial architecture for the whole world, or is it going to be a pet rock that, you know, most of the people in the West who got in early and China got in early can just exit at the right time? And if they exit in fiat, we just basically completely capitulate to the system we were trying to remove. But if they exit with Bitcoin, peer-to-peer,
right,
for all those, then, okay, we have something. But wait a minute, we don't want to spend our Bitcoin. We want to hold on to it until the exit happens. So those peer-to-peer off-ramps aren't there yet.
Yeah.
There's not enough people in those, you know, what's it going to be, other hodlers trading with other hodlers? No, they all have the
right
same profile. So,
right.
So who's going to build the off-ramps for the exit, which are not really off-ramps at that point. It's a full-on economy. If all of these hodlers don't actually want to spend their Bitcoin now, you think it's all going to happen at once? Oh, yeah, I'm ready to cash out and get my mansion. Is anyone want to take my Bitcoin? No? Okay, I'll just sell it for dollars. All right, thank you, BlackRock.
Right.
You see how they've set us up. And I'm here saying, you know what, man? Bitcoin's biggest, they're not going to just take down Bitcoin. The biggest threat to Bitcoin is it becomes irrelevant, and it's just a cash out system for the West. That's what I'm fighting to control, to spare us from. But we have to build all these off-ramps. We have to build a whole peer-to-peer economy. But these guys don't want to spend. Okay, fine, bro. You don't have to spend. You hold on your Bitcoin. You wait for that exit. No problem, bro. I'm going to focus all my energy over here on these people that are actually using it right now.
Right.
So when the time comes, you'll have those. You'll have that economy. Now, you might have to move to Africa or the Global South because that's where it's going to be. But in the West, 99% of them are going to sell for fiat when they exit. That's the truth.
Yep.
So that's why I say Bitcoin in the West is capitulated, man. We know the way it's going to go. I'm not going to be there to build. I hope someone does build those off-ramps there. But the truth is, look at America. Peer-to-peer is the number one enemy in America. The DOJ is training local prosecutors on how to bust peer-to-peer traders. That's one of the reasons local Bitcoins went down.
Yep.
You look at an environment that hostile, and who's going to do it over there? It's not going to happen, bro.
Yeah.
Which is why.
100%. And I think when we think about this concept of off-ramp, I think what people need to start changing is, I'm going to trade my Bitcoin for dollars and then do something. And what the change needs to be for people listening, maybe in the West, it needs to be, I'm going to exchange my Bitcoin for value for something else, but you're going to transact in Bitcoin. I've started doing that, you know, with people abroad, different transactions for whatever reasons, but it takes a minute to snap into that because the HODL meme has been such a prevalent thing in the Bitcoin space. Just hold it until the time is right. So the message that I'm sending here and that I think Ray is trying to send through everything he does is the time is now. We're not waiting for the time is right anymore. Bitcoin is a medium of exchange to people. If you haven't seen this with your own two eyes in Africa or Latin America, Southeast Asia, take our word for it. We have seen it with our own two eyes. We've seen the circular economies. We've seen the difference that it's making in people's lives to be able to transact with, you know, in very simple terms, what many consider to be digital gold. These are very real things in these situations. And also, just as a quick, you know, as a quick thing for listeners as well, if you do attend conferences in these countries, Ghana, wherever it is, El Salvador, places that I've been recently, I'm also, please go outside of the conference to actually see what life is like in some of these circular economies or just in communities in general. And I will say this, if it's your first time in some of these communities, your first instinct might be to put up your guard. It can be a bit scary because if you're from the West and you have never seen some of this stuff, it might be. But I would just say, again, you don't have to drop your guard 100%. Just try to drop it 10%. Try to let a little bit of it in because I think that will change you and it will start to give you a little bit more perspective on the power that Bitcoin can have in some of these places as a tool for people in certain situations who don't have many, especially financial tools. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely, brother.
I want to leave it there. I know Ray is a busy man, and I want to thank you for your time, but I want to also just open the floor for two things. Please let people know where they could find No Ones. We didn't get into CivKit, but please tell us a little bit about that. Let us know where we can eventually find it when it's ready to go, and then also where people can find you online, and then anything else you'd like to share.
Yeah, okay. So, overview. No Ones is more than just a startup or a super app for the Global South. I really see it as a peer-to-peer nation, the world's first peer-to-peer nation. Because all the things that our governments should have given us, the ability to transact, you know, financially as a human right, communication, none of them gave us that. So I'm going to deliver that as a private team, as a private business. Great. I'm the CEO, but I really see myself as the chief advocate. And I want to build an army of these advocates. That's the mission there. First trillion-dollar company in the Global South, inspire everyone, and bring in competition. That's the thing. That's what makes us different. I have three values in No Ones. We've already gone into bullish education, revolutionary transparency. I'm going to run the company like a public company. I'm going to share all the stats with everyone, daring to give away too much. It has to be that way. If I'm the CEO of Bitcoin, you got to be transparent, right? And also everyone eats, meaning everyone eats at this table. I want to give away 50% of our revenue back to the community. I'm not giving any money to Google, Facebook, or Instagram. It's all going to go back to the people, and we're going to build this peer-to-peer nation ourselves. But hey, I kind of want some competition because it can't get too lonely out there. I'm not going to do this the way CZ did it. He took all the money off the table, tried to centralize everything. That's not the way this is going to happen. He's still sitting in Seattle. I hope he gets free. But hey, we're going to leave as much of the money on the table as humanly possible to keep the lights on. Mm-hmm. And we're going to bring in all the competition. That's what SIFKit is about. An open source, decentralized protocol, open source for life. Protocol doesn't earn anything. It basically allows anyone to build their own peer-to-peer marketplace, peer-to-peer applications around Bitcoin. Yep. The token is called BTC. That's it.
That's it.
And no one's will be the first company to build on SIFKit. And all SIFKit is all the marketplace and all the tools necessary to make a marketplace run, which includes a decentralized court system, KYP, know your peer instead of KYC, decentralized anonymous global identity, which is needed for a marketplace. And also we need a form of eCash for a stable coin backed up by Bitcoin, kind of like MakerDAO for Bitcoin. Those are the core components. Because I want everyone to compete with me at No One's. You can come and compete with me and I'll help you. So all that coming together, we will truly have a peer-to-peer nation and a peer-to-peer world. I want to set the example. I want to inspire everyone. I want to make everyone a ton of money. And I want everyone to see us all making money. So they come all over. Not just private enterprises and people that want to compete with me. But I want these governments to see all this money that's happening here. And they're going to be like, hey, wait a minute. Why should we listen to these economic hitmen over here when there's really so much money right here in our own backyard? Eventually, they're going to say, you know what, forget that. Let's come over. Because people follow the money. People follow the business. And if you know, an awakened humanity can move very, very fast. Very fast. What took them 2,000 years and unlimited money to build, we can make back in less than 10 years. That's beautiful to me. We're hunting giants over here, brother. And it feels
it's
good.
Yeah, it's yeah, this is, yeah. This is why I'm a big fan of Ray. I think we all need to think a little bit more. We need to think a lot more this way. And I do think it's possible. We've actually, to be honest, we've already seen it in Africa. They leapfrog, you know, they moved. They didn't put in telephone landlines in Africa. They went straight from a certain period of development to digital technology. Who's to say they can't leapfrog other things that we've done in the West and just move straight to a Bitcoin standard transacting more with this, utilizing this technology that we in the West are not taking full advantage of because of either restrictions or our own lack of knowledge or even lack of need for. We're using the traditional rails because they're more convenient, though they're not really doing us much good in terms of the money that we're using on them. I will leave it there. Ray, where can people find you online? Where can they learn more?
Ray SIFKit on Twitter, on Instagram, on Telegram. You can find me in a lot of places. I'm always popping my head out everywhere, and just send me a message, follow me. I'll usually follow back as well. I'm following a lot of people, and I'm always open to learn. Like, I am the chief advocate. I am on the streets. I am listening. You guys are teaching me everything. That's why I'm so clued in, man, because my ear is always to the ground. I take that street work real serious. That's why I'm here.
We know that, and everyone that I speak with that works with you can only confirm that. Ray is a true leader. He leads from the front, but he's also listening. I think a lot of people appreciate that. They appreciate being paid attention to by you. They appreciate the attention that you give them and the fact that you take what they have to say and share with you seriously. I was one of them. When I first responded to a few tweets of yours a few years ago or something, you responded and it was like, oh, who's this guy? He doesn't need to be responding to me. And that means a lot. And I think it's authentic. It's not just a marketing gimmick or something like that. And that's why it means a lot as well. So Ray, thank you so much for doing this. I hope to see you again on the African continent in 2024, sooner than later. And it was an honor. Thank you for coming on. I know this is a smaller podcast. You're a bigger guy. And again, that's sort of another attribute to, how willing you are to sort of do the work with us people who are just starting stuff out here.
It's my honor, brother. You are a lion. And like I said, I'd rather have one lion than a million of the rest, brother. And you certainly are it, bro. My honor.
That, all right. Well, we'll talk soon. Thank you so much, Ray. All right, everybody. Talk to you guys soon.